It's time now to get behind the headlines of this week's Hendersonville Lightning with editor and publisher Bill Moss.
Good morning. The lightning is on the streets. The lightning is in your mailboxes. And it's Thursday, which means the lightning is on the radio. Bill Moss, editor and publisher of The Lightning. Good morning, sir. Welcome to Lightning Radio, a very close to Christmas edition.
Yes, it certainly is. And we'll have to queue up a favorite Christmas carol, a Christmas tune.
Yes, sir.
Mrs. Overso, Merry
yes,
Christmas
sir.
Once again, everybody.
From Bill's top five, we'll get that one in. Absolutely. Jam-packed full of stuff in this week's Lightning again, Bill. So I'm going to suggest we hop right to it. And, of course, big story on the front page is about Thomas Shepherd and Son funeral directors, saying that the Board of Funeral Service is going to refer its findings to law enforcement.
Yeah, this could be not necessarily, we don't know for sure, it could be the sound of the other shoe dropping in the Thomas Shepherd and Son saga that goes back more than 100 years, about 118 years is one of the oldest, if not the oldest, continuing business. You got Jeff Miller, you got Flanagan Printing, you got a handful of others that are maybe that old, but not very many. And in this case, this one is not going to be around any longer, really, right now, with its revocation of all of its permitting, all of its licenses to be a funeral home. Thomas Redmond Shepherd, the president and the main funeral director and the manager, of course, since 1965, his license, Melody Shepherd, who actually is officially is the president of Thomas Shepherd and Son Funeral Directors Company and Shepherd Memorial Park. She's revoked as well, and this story, which we had that story a couple weeks ago, but this sheds more light, more lurid details on what people testified to during the hearing or in affidavits, including one that kind of turned state's evidence, you might say, and was worked there from January 2020 until June 2020, and was a key witness in last month's hearing that resulted in the board's vote to revoke all the permitting. And there's some details there.
Sure, sure.
That she only saw Thomas Shepherd. His health has not been good.
Yeah, I need that.
Since
yeah.
October of, we have that in the timeline. We'll get to that in a minute. She only saw Thomas Shepherd one time during her 6 months there. It was Melody Shepherd who directed her to meet with a family member. That's illegal because even meeting with family members to talk about funeral arrangements and give them pricing and then ultimately maybe signing a contract and a so-called pre-need contract. Sometimes it's pre-need, sometimes it's at-need when people walk in and want to get the funeral home, obviously, to handle the arrangements. And she testified, Ms. Blackwell did, that Melody Shepherd, quote, maintained a stack of death certificates that were pre-signed by Thomas Shepherd, and, quote, when employees needed a death certificate, they would take one of the pre-signed certificates out of the cabinet for their use. That's also not legal. And there was a variety of things. Again, this was a case of the one situation that where Ms. Blackwell had met with the family member. That one really became a train wreck, and the family decided to transfer the mother's body and the funeral arrangements, of course, to another funeral home, in which case Melody, this person testified, quote, ripped up the signed death certificate for decedent Beck so that the successor would be required to obtain a new death certificate. So, like I say, more lurid details from the hearing. And finally, Ms. Blackwell testified that when she went on a 10-day vacation in May, she returned to find the unembalmed decedents who had been stored at the funeral home without refrigeration during the full period that she was on leave. So, sorry, that does not pass the Wheaties test, I'm sure, but it gives you some sense of the depth and the information that the funeral directing the funeral regulatory board was hearing last month that resulted in this revocation. Comes complete with our trademark timeline starting in 1903.
Wow. Wow. So where does it ultimately go from here, Bill? Let's talk about the future timeline. What happens next?
I heard at the top of the news, we had the quote that came after the print issue that we didn't get to, but we didn't make the print issue. Stephen Davis, the executive director of the board of North Carolina Board of Funeral Service, tells us that process is not done of the compliance staff and the general counsel and the legal staff reviewing this record, which is voluminous, and deciding whether to turn it over to law enforcement, which he confirmed would be the district attorney. We had checked, and this story says we had checked with the sheriff's office, city police, and the district attorney. To find at that time, no one had received a truckload of files or a referral or anything yet, but it wouldn't have come yet because it's still under review in Raleigh for a possible referral. It's not to say one would happen. Obviously, they've already had, if not the death penalty, something close to it's a 5-year revocation. They're not eligible to reapply for any licensing, permitting, crematory management, crematory use for 5 years. So, like I say, that's already a pretty severe penalty for a 118-year-old business.
Right. Also, in your online story, Bill, you mentioned something about the cemetery.
Shepherd Memorial Park.
Yes.
And stay tuned for that. We're bird dogging a little more detail there. That will probably, readers, excuse me, we'll see more about that in the coming days and in the December 22nd issue of the Hendersonville Lightning.
Okay. All right. I'm sure the Lightning will continue to dog this story. We're going to take an early break here because we got more politics to talk about here, or we're going to move into some four-season politics, and I don't want to interrupt that. So you are listening to Lightning Radio here on your community radio station, WTZQ, with Bill Moss.
Finding the right insurance doesn't have to be a difficult task. That's where the professionals at Barnett & Coates come in. Family-owned and founded back in 1969, you can rest assured that the Barnett & Coates team has a strong insurance background, paired with product knowledge to serve you best. From auto, home, business and contractor liability, and business auto to outdoor vehicles and watercraft, with Barnett & Coates, you'll experience the quality service you only find with an independent agency. Barnett & Coates, Spartanburg Highway near Chick-fil-A or at barnettandcoates.com.
Cold weather is coming, so you'd better be prepared. Kaysen Oil has fuel oil and K1 kerosene readily available. Schedule your delivery today by calling 693-0246. Family owned and operated Kaysen Oil, serving our community for over 40 years.
And don't forget, for local weather anytime at your fingertips, call the Kaysen Builders Weather Line at 696-1610. That's the Kaysen Builders Weather Line, 696-1610.
Make it a musical Christmas this year with Tempo Music on Main Street. Tempo is fully stocked with everything musical, from books, strings and straps, to guitars, keyboards and amps. And remember, Tempo can fix everything they sell. Ask about beginner guitar packages and you'll be blown away at all the ukulele. Here's a great Christmas gift, music lessons. Tempo offers lessons for everything they sell. Looking to upgrade a student's band or orchestra instrument? Tempo has unbeatable specials. Visit Tempo Music on Main Street for a musical Christmas.
Car Stars on Upward Road wants you to know that they can handle all of your vehicle's scheduled maintenance, and chances are you'll pay less than taking it to a dealer. And if you've got holiday travel plans coming up, stop your car by Car Stars and let them give it a look over. Hey, Car Stars is growing fast, and they need good professional help. If you fit the bill, stop by Car Stars and see Rick. Car Stars on Upward Road, your family mechanic.
Merry Christmas, everyone, from the Goldsmith by Rudy on Main Street in Hendersonville. Rudy's wants to say thank you for your support and for sharing many of your most precious moments with them. Wishing each of you a healthy, joyful, and prosperous new year.
And we are back with Lightning Radio with Bill Moss, editor and publisher of Hendersonville Lightning and HendersonvilleLightning.com. And my apologies for going to the break a bit soon. Before we get into Four Seasons politics, there is another story on the front page of this week's Lightning, Bill, that we have been talking about for a few weeks now, and that is Community Foundation versus Op House. Apparently, that is going to move forward.
Yeah, still under that rubric of local businesses or organizations that are in some or a heap, depending on your point of view, of legal trouble. You got the lawsuit by the Community Foundation of Henderson County to determine, asking a court to determine whether the Opportunity House is operating legitimately, legally, as a nonprofit agency with a tax exemption, and whether it can sell its building and do who knows what to the proceeds, which might be, if you go by what the tax value of the buildings and land is $1.9 million. So, and Superior Court Judge Peter Knight, the resident chief of Superior Court, said, yes, indeed, that lawsuit can go forward. You, the Opportunity House, you're not correct that we should dismiss this lawsuit for the foundation's, in your view, lack of standing. We say it can go forward. So go forward, it will, probably sometime within the first 6 months of 2022. So we have that to look forward to.
So there'll be, much more to come on that story.
And much more to come even quicker than that. This is another thing that we have a little piece of and we'll have more of, which is that the meanwhile, recent action by the Henderson County Tax Office probably portends a second legal front for the Op House to defend, because the Henderson County Tax Collector is reviewing the tax-exempt status of the Opportunity House.
Uh-huh.
That could mean, if it's similar to the Canoga Conference Center case,
yep,
which is you are now taxable, and indeed you're taxable going back, it could say this, because they've been renting to for-profit businesses for a while now. If they do to Op House what they did to Canoga Conference Center, Op House could owe current taxes, penalties, and past year taxes going back to around 2016, 2017. So more to come on that.
All right. We'll look forward to hearing more about that, Bill, with the Lightning. Thank you for covering these kinds of stories. Let's move on to Four Seasons Politics. That's really where the Lightning shines a light all the time. So we've got some stories to cover here. Let's start with Mills River and their new town council members and new mayor.
Well, exactly. And we've been talking. I've been saying that there's always a little asterisk around Mills River. It has some of the only suspense, you might say, when you go to the organizational meeting, because Mills River is the only town in the county that elects a mayor just from within the council,
right,
not by the voters at large. So we had been waiting on that. I was out of town and unable to go, and reporter Amy McCraw covered that. And the drum roll on that is Shannon Gauntz. He's an experienced council member, on it from 2005. He was first elected and served for 12 years before he had to step down to help his wife, Barbara, get through some medical issues. And it looks like she emerged from that in really good shape, which is good news for Shannon Gauntz and good news for Barbara and good news, I would say, for the Mills River Town Council, because I always thought Shannon was one of the most best common sense. He knows a ton about construction. I think he's a home builder in his day job, and real common sense kind of leader. And what does he want to target? He wants to target and take a look at that $800,000 a year law enforcement contract that Mills River has with Henderson County Sheriff's Office.
It's
that former county manager Steve White and former sheriff Charlie McDonald caused to happen quite some number of years ago now. That expires, I think, at the end of this fiscal year. So, and it maybe it was a five-year contract. So we'll see. It costs about... it's quite a bit of money. It costs I don't know, maybe 5 or 7 cents on the property tax to fund it.
Yeah, one of the reasons why there was a council member turnover a few years ago, if I recall. That was part of it.
Yeah, it was part of it. They had a choice. That was the more having police coverage was more popular than having garbage or street lights or roads or other things that they're required to have as a city. It didn't used to be that way.
Yeah.
Flat Rock got under before they changed that because they found these cities were becoming cities and not acting like cities, you might say,
right,
when it comes to providing of services.
Yeah.
Because Flat Rock provides none of those things. It doesn't provide garbage. It produces some garbage sometimes, but it doesn't provide any garbage collection or police and coverage, and doesn't have to.
And I think that whole Mills River thing years ago with that decision also turned a lot of Mills River voters against that sheriff, which is one of the reasons why we had the sheriff turnover also.
Yes, and in that same neighborhood,
right.
The Tommy Bryson case, and,
yeah.
and broadly throughout the county, Sheriff McDonald's Law Enforcement Training Center efforts.
Right.
That managed to ricochet through about three or four different communities in the county.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's stay on Four Seasons politics. Bill, we've got a couple of announcements of people deciding to run. Let's start with Jennifer Capps Balcom.
This one's not gotten too crowded. This race, which we're talking about, the State House District 117, currently held by Tim Moffitt, hoping to move up to State Senate. And this is the domino falling we've been talking about for a couple weeks now. Hoping to move up into that State Senate, vacated by Chuck Edwards, who is running for Congress in a seat vacated by Madison Cawthorn, who's going down the mountain to a different, even more safe Republican seat. But this is Jennifer Capps Balcom. A lot of readers and listeners will know the name Capps. She's related to, if she's a Capps, she's related to a lot of people. As she says, she is a lifelong and longtime native and says if she is elected, she will bring Henderson County's small town conservative values and my decades of practical business experience to Raleigh. Also running in that race is Chelsea Walsh. People will recall that she's the former County Republican Party chairwoman who ran unsuccessfully for a Hendersonville City Council seat just last month.
Mm-hmm. And that is followed by another announcement.
Now we go to Congress.
Thank you.
And even the aforementioned congressional seat, now known as the 13th, if that doesn't say. And what I meant to say back at the top of this, of the politics, is it's quieted down a bit because the North Carolina Supreme Court has suspended filing. So that flurry of filing we saw when filing opened that's frozen now until the Supreme Court and the State Board of Elections actually resets the filing period, which it has not done. The Supreme Court order said the primary is going to be moved from March to May to try to resolve this lawsuit over both the legislative and congressional district lines, but we don't even have right now yet, when we talked to the Board of Elections director this week, we don't even have a filing period yet. But this gentleman is a 51-year-old Highlands man by the name of Ken McKim, declares himself, there'll be a lot that will be vying for this title in the minds and the hearts and minds of the voters in that primary, I'm sure, calling himself the most conservative candidate running for the Republican nomination. He's a native of Texas and one of the eldest of 13 children. He says family values are important. That comes up a lot. And he ran for the, it doesn't say won, it says he ran for the Texas State House at the age of 24. He worked as an intern under U.S. Representative Sam Johnson, Republican of Texas, and U.S. Representative Daniel Webster, Republican of Florida, that I covered in the Florida House many, many years ago when he was in the State House, Representative from Orlando. And he's been active in politics, currently manages real estate and a development company. Is a both real estate broker and a contractor that likes to buy and remodel and sell houses. I guess he flips. And also running for that Republican nomination are, we mentioned him, Senator Edwards, Navy veteran Wendy Navarez, retired Army Colonel Rod Honeycutt, Pisgah Inn owner Bruce O'Donnell, Republican Party activist Michelle Woodhouse, and Matthew Burrell, a retired financial advisor who is current chair of the Asheville Regional Airport Authority.
Right, right. Help water something down for me, Bill, if you would. When you say that filing has been suspended.
Correct.
So if you haven't, does that mean we will see more filings later?
It will reopen.
Okay.
What the Supreme Court order said, if you got in there. You remember on the very first day of filing, it was suspended before it opened at noon. It was suspended. Well, election directors were notified of this, I think we said, 21 minutes before they were going to open the gate for filing. That order from a state appeals court got reversed by the Supreme Court, which reopened filing only to close it a few days later again. So those that did get in to file for state house, state senate, or Congress, the Supreme Court order says you don't have to file again when we reopen it. You're considered filed.
Okay.
What we don't know is will this lawsuit against the seats be successful on any level, either legislature or Congress? And if so, if these districts then change, I would think they might have to throw out filing and start over. Because if the seats,
right?
Because you filed for a seat, you filed for a seat that no longer exists. Basically,
right?
It's not valid.
Let me ask you this, Bill. I know we got some other stories to cover, but I have to ask you this because you've been a political junkie for a long time. You've been covering this not just here but wherever. Is this one of the strangest times for politics and elections you've ever been through, or have you seen it like this before?
The latter. Because if you're talking about North Carolina is known, and I think it safely has and defends the title as the most litigious state when it comes to redistricting battles.
Yeah.
I mean, it goes back to Republicans contesting Democrat gerrymanders,
right?
You know, the 80s and 90s, and,
yeah.
And certainly when the Republicans took control in that landslide, anti-Obamacare landslide of 2010, when they took control of the state house and state senate here in North Carolina, those lawsuits went on. They went on as recently as I think all the way up to for the congressional seats, all the way up to the 2018 election cycle. So, no, the answer sadly is, it's when it comes to redistricting lawsuits and fights in North Carolina, it's always deja vu all over again.
Wow. Interesting. Interesting. Let's move on to some other news, Bill. Let's talk about the Community Foundation. This happened a bit ago, and it's printed in the Lightning this week. It's they announced the Sauer Awards.
Yeah, absolutely.
The Sauer and Dot Marlowe Award.
Very deserving. They've gone in recent years, and I think it's a good idea. They're probably recognizing that. It's not just the mom, not just the dad, or not just the wife, or not just the husband. They've had several cases in recent years of couples, and that winning the Sauer Award, which is the oldest and probably the most prestigious, you might say. They've added another one, which is also probably equally prestigious, but much newer. We'll talk about that in a second. But this year's winner, Dirk and Paige Wilms, unfortunately didn't get to have an in-person. Once again, did not get to have an in-person lunch and celebration and awards time in public. But they've been, the Wilms family, a couple, has been connected with the Community Foundation since 2002. They established their own charitable giving funds that they use to support numerous organizations throughout Henderson County. They won this award along with the past Sauer Award winners. We always like to name Ron and Norma Rosenberger last year. This is the trend of couples I talked about. Hall and Sonia Waddell, Grace Poley, Byrne and Toby Linder, Phyllis Rothrock, Ruth Burge, Thomas R. Shepherd. There's that name, well-known, prominent in the community for many, many, many years.
Yeah.
Mary R. Garrison, Dr. Stewart, and Carola Cohn, Marion Lowry, Teddy Siegel, Robert and Doris Eklund. There they are again.
I remember them
Dr. Kathleen McGrady family, Jeff Miller, Dwayne and Peggy McKibben, Dot Marlowe, Dr. Colin Thomas, Frank Bird, Tom and Sue Fazio, Eleanor Malone, Marcia Casario, Bill Stokes, William E. Jamie Jameson, Executive Director, President of Party Hospital, Kermit Edney, Morris Kaplan, Kenneth Youngblood, and Frank Eubank. Eubank. So yeah. that's a Hall of Fame of
it sure is.
People involved in civic life in our community for a long time.
Yep, and all very, very well deserved.
And there's a Doc Marlowe winner as well, and that was Kathleen Lees, who's been involved for 19 years, advocacy work as guardian ad litem. Involved in many, many organizations, such as spearheading the first Martin Luther King Jr. Unity Breakfast more than 20 years ago. Ms. Lees, congratulations to her as well. Another very deserving award winner.
Yep, absolutely. Let's close out with a couple of more stories here, Bill Moss. Conserving Carolina has purchased some property, so we're going to have some more land for fishing and birding and wildlife watching and a place that many of us are somewhat familiar with if you ever drive out to Mills River.
Well, exactly. I know a fair amount of local history and lore and did not know that the bridge that you pass over the French Broad River on NC 191 is apparently known as King's Bridge.
I didn't know that either.
That's where you can see that sod. There's usually a sign, and it's a sod farm down there, and they've worked with the sod farm to buy that and conserve that property. So that is now known as King's Bridge Wildlife Conservation Area. It's about two-thirds of a mile of frontage along the French Broad River where, as you say, people can watch wildlife, they can bird watch, and they can fish. They can do everything but hunt because it is a designated safety zone and hunting is not permitted.
Okay.
Look for that to happen and people can enjoy that. I think it says here, yeah, that 87 acres of wildlife probably is a lot of good birding around that.
I bet. Absolutely.
And some decent fishing as well.
Yeah. Yep. But let's finish it out, Bill. The Hendersonville Christmas Parade was just under 2 weeks ago, and you've got the merchants have announced the parade winners, the Merchants Association has.
Yeah, unfortunately, we were not able to make it to the parade this year. So we don't have a picture, and they didn't send a picture. That's nice to have a picture. But the winners were Habitat for Humanity for Best Use of Theme, the Henderson County Republican Party for Most Attractive, and We the People for Most Original. And We the People is that was that organization that held the big rally over there at starting at the Grove Street Courthouse parking lot and marched all around town protesting mask and vaccine mandates. So they apparently were the most original.
Well, congratulations to those winners, and thank you, Hendersonville Merchants and Business Association, for stepping up and sponsoring and providing our Christmas parade again this year.
Oh yeah, that's like herding cats. So that's not an easy job.
It is
to run a parade.
No, it is not. So, Bill, lots more in this week's Lightning. Tell people where they can pick up their copy.
Oh, all around the town. Get out. You can get out in this nice weather. And visit any of our 60 Lightning Orange racks all around the county, or go to HendersonvilleLightning.com and click on subscribe, and that'll walk you through how to join the growing legions of Lightning fans that get their Lightning today. Lightning Thursday, or also really easy and fun to do, is to call Jan at 698-0407.
And coming up just after the break, one of Bill Moss's top five holiday tunes here on The Q.
You've been listening to Lightning Thursday with Bill Moss, editor and publisher of the Hendersonville Lightning and HendersonvilleLightning.com. This program, as well as past episodes, can be heard in their entirety on our website at WTZQ.com. Click on air and scroll down to Lightning Thursday.